tuned in to the Community Cats podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we're speaking with Caitlin Porter. Caitlin is the president and executive director of From Feral to Family, which is a small feral cat rescue that began in Addison, Vermont in January of 2021 by a mother-daughter duo. The daily commute brought us past a farm with a colony of over 100 feral cats and kittens. They started out by fostering and socializing 20 kittens that were able to go to the local shelter, but the only option for the adults was TNR. While spending time with this colony trapping the kittens, they started to see signs in some of the adults that they would be able to be socialized. Because of the longer amount of time it takes to socialize an adult feral cat, the local shelter was unable to take them in. So they decided to start their own rescue focusing on socializing feral cats. They take the time to meet each cat where it is, build trust and safety with them, and patiently and unconditionally love each cat until it enjoys human companionship and is able to be adopted. They strive to go a step beyond TNR by giving feral cats the opportunity to live a comfortable life with a loving family. Caitlin, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much.
So we talked a little bit there in the bio, but you know, how did you get to be passionate about cats? Were you passionate before you got involved in this barn situation?
So I always had cats growing up. My dad was a carpenter, and so he would go and be working on like a barn or some other building, and a mama cat would have gotten hit and there would be kittens that needed a place to go. And so he would bring them home. And so we always had multiple cats growing up. So I've always loved cats, but I was never really passionate like I am now about cats until I got involved in socializing feral cats.
They are truly wonderful beings in this world. I've had many feral cats in my life. I have adopted many. I guess many of us will say we are foster failures because of that. And I call them the no-see-ems sometimes in the house, but they are really wonderful, wonderful companion cats. Before the show, before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about what does this all mean? So much of our work right now, people are talking about return to field and let's just spay-neuter everybody and put everybody back out, ear-tip them, spay-neuter. Let's get every cat out there. And, you know, in our pre-conversation, I sort of got the sense that it's not as easy as that. There are other decisions that need to be made as you get to know the colony, as you get to know the cats. And especially in a situation where if you're assisting a colony where returning those cats back to a specific location may not be feasible. Tell me a little bit about your approach with regards to feral cats and TNR, and just share with us a little bit more about your thoughts.
Sure. So TNR obviously is great for population control for outdoor cat colonies. And after seeing some colonies that have not had population control and seeing how quickly they grow and how unhealthy they can get, it's really important to me and the members of my board and my staff that we really help these cats. So we bring them in and we start them in a large dog crate for their safety and for ours. And we just kind of start by really slowly by talking to them, you know, not invading their space too much until their body language shows that they're now comfortable with us being near their space. And so then we just kind of keep going with that. We read each cat and their body language and try to listen to them. So if growling or hissing, we won't attempt to touch them because that's them very clearly saying, I don't want you to touch me. So a lot of the cats that we've worked with, the first colony of over 100 cats, we were able to bring 85 of them in, not all at once. So our process, we're very small. When we started, we were just keeping the cats. We had two rooms in our home that we designated as the cat area. So it's been kind of tricky deciding whether to get them spayed or neutered immediately on bringing them in or wait a little bit until they're social. So we've kind of done both methods. We've done like the typical TNR method where we trap the cats the night before we have the appointment. We bring them, they get fixed and vaccinated, and then we bring them back to our home and continue the socialization process. Others we've socialized before we've gotten them sterilized, and both avenues have been effective. Out of the group of 85 cats, we only had 6 that we were unable to socialize. And so those went to barn placements. We had people who wanted rodent control in their barns, but the rest we were able to socialize. And it's really special to go through that process, to start with a cat that is hissing at you, growling at you, sometimes lunging at you, trying to scratch you, bite you, being very defensive. And then to have over time, have that cat sometimes turn into a lap cat. Those are the really, really special, like heartwarming, brings me to tears moments, is when a cat decides that now wants to come sit in my lap, when 4 months ago it wanted nothing to do with me. And then there are other cats that we continue to work with and they never want to sit in our lap, but they will come up and they want to be pet. And it's nice because there are our adopters. So we go through a typically longer process with our adopters than most other organizations do. So they fill out the application and then we respond to them. We talk about the cat's personality. We're always very transparent and open with any behavioral issues that the cats do have or health issues. So usually through that process, we build a pretty good relationship with our adopters before they even come and meet their cat and bring their cat home. And then we also offer some after adoption services where if the adopter is having troubles with bonding with their cat, we offer some suggestions because we've gotten to know that cat and we've learned a lot of their preferences and how they are handled and interacted with. So we have only had one cat returned out of the 69 that we placed in homes. Our methods seem to be working and our adopters are very happy with their cats.
Wow, that's wonderful. You've just taken it from the beginning through to the end of the process. In the situation with this one very large colony that you came across. So you started out not just doing a small 2 to 6 cats in, you know, someone's backyard. You started out with a very large situation that you needed to address right away. I'm assuming it says here that you started in January of 2021. Mm-hmm. I would assume that you became aware of this colony of cats in 2021. Yes?
We became aware of the colony in October of 2020. And that's when we started taking the kittens and bringing them, socializing them, and then bringing them to the shelter.
Okay.
Yeah. But then in December of 2020 was when we were told, you know, cats over a year old, if they haven't been socialized, it's not possible. And yeah, and we were just like, well, we've been spending time with this colony and that's just not true. So we're going to try it. So we did.
Many of the cats that you've trapped, I'm just wondering what sort of the average, to use the industry language, is the average length of stay or the length of rehabilitation period that you have had with these cats?
Sure. Really, every cat is really individual. I have had kittens that we brought in that by the end of the first day, they're like climbing your shoulder, snuggling up in your face. I've also had kittens that after a month, they're still hissing at us. And so then we have to try different techniques to try to help them feel more comfortable where they are. And then I've had adults socialize in as little as a week, not fully socialized, but accepting being pet and starting to enjoy that. I've also had a cat that we had for a full year and he was very reactive for that full year. And then one day it was like a switch went off in his head and he became a lap cat within a week after really resisting it for a year.
How do you identify if there's any, you're just talking about he was very reactive. How are you able to identify whether there's something medical going on or if it really is a behavioral situation that you need to work on? Do you feel like you can identify one from the other?
Sometime. It is tricky, especially in the beginning when they are not trusting of us and they see us as a threat. It's really hard to get close and do the medical stuff that we need to. Well, to deworm on intake, we just mix it in with their wet food for the first few days. And they usually, after being outside their whole lives, they're hungry enough that they'll just eat it, even though it smells a little funny with the dewormer in it. And also, if there are like obvious injuries, we do take them to the vet. We have a great vet that is very supportive of our mission. So he's always available anytime. We can bring the cats in traps or in carriers, depending on their socialization status. And I think a lot of the times the cats come in and they are malnourished and they have worms. They often have upper respiratory infections. So we are also able to treat with amoxicillin mixed into their wet food. And so far that has worked really well. It is tricky to tell if it is behavior or health related, especially if it's not like an obvious illness. So yeah, we do our best. And if there's any question, we get them to the vet and have him look them over to make sure that there's not anything more serious going on.
Calling all kitten enthusiasts, get ready for a one-of-a-kind, two-day virtual experience dedicated entirely to kittens. Introducing the 2024 Online Kitten Conference, taking place on June 8th and 9th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time and presented by the Community Cats Podcast and the National Kitten Coalition. Prepare to be whisked away into a world of adorable antics and invaluable insight as leading experts gather to celebrate and educate on all things kitten. From newborn care to playful behavior, this conference is a treasure trove of knowledge for anyone committed to improving the lives of these fluffy bundles of joy. Whether you're a seasoned kitten rescuer or new to animal welfare and eager to learn the ropes, the Online Kitten Conference offers a perfect blend of practical advice and in-depth details about the new and the now in kitten care. From empowering fosters to preventing upper respiratory disease, from kitten socialization and behavioral well-being to what we know about kitten mortality and how we can help each other deal with loss, the weekend's live sessions, engaging workshops, and intimate discussions are crafted to nurture your passion and enhance your knowledge of these pint-sized purr machines so you can make a difference. Access to our exclusive Facebook group is included with your registration. There you can connect with fellow kitten lovers from across the globe, share your experiences, and discover innovative approaches to kitten care and advocacy. Also included is access to recordings of all sessions. You can review anything you miss, or if you found something particularly interested, check it out again. And you'll also be able to participate in fun cat trivia and prizes. Some lucky attendee will even win a cage from CDE Cages. With the convenience of an online platform, you can join in the fun from the comfort of your own couch, surrounded by your own furry friends, and probably your kitten fosters. Visit communitycatspodcast.com/kittencon now to reserve your spot in the 2024 Online Kitten Conference. Once again, that website for details and registration is communitycatspodcast.com/kittencon. Let's come together, celebrate the smallest felines, and pave the way for a bright future for these precious creatures. Don't miss out. Register today.
Want an easy grant opportunity for your animal organization? Maddie's Fund is giving away a $3,000 grant each month to one lucky Maddie's Pet Forum member. You'll automatically be entered to win each month when you start a new discussion, reply to a new post, or upload a new library resource. Learn more at forum.maddiesfund.org today.
Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com.
When you're talking about working with the cats to get them to start trusting people, are you familiar with fear-free? Have you utilized any of the fear-free techniques, or is this something that you've just developed on your own?
I am not familiar with fear-free techniques. I'm writing it down so I can look more into it. This is really just, it's been trial and error. My daughter, when we got started, was, I believe she was 13. And so, yeah, she's 16 now. So it's really been trial and error and just persistent love and not getting frustrated with the cats if they take a little longer, to be less afraid of us. And yeah, I'm excited to look into this fear-free because I feel like it will be very helpful.
Yeah, there are quite a few free training resources on the website there. And there's also a wonderful video by Mike Phillips of the Urban Cat League. And it's on YouTube about socializing feral cats and kittens. And he has rescued a lot of feral cats and kittens from New York City over the years, since the 90s. And he's put together some wonderful educational videos. We have one of them up on the Community Cats Podcast YouTube page. We also have recordings and interviews with Tabitha Cusera, who's a fear-free certified behaviorist and has done a lot of, she's a veterinary technician. So she talks about safe handling techniques and, you know, how to do a blood draw without scruffing a cat and those kinds of things. So there's some great resources out there. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing. So many folks are entering into this world trying to help cats, and you're new and you're learning. And so it's wonderful to meet with you, you know, here in this podcast space to share with you as well as others. You know, a week ago, I had a TNR certification workshop with about 200 folks, and, you know, 150 of them had never attended anything about animals at all, any sort of session, but they just want to help the cats in their backyard. And so, you know, here you are, Caitlin, you're seeing a problem, you're seeing it, you're solving it, but we need a lot more Caitlins to be able to do this for the very many colonies that are out there all across the country. What would you say to the other folks that are seeing a situation in their community with 20, 50 cats? What would you recommend they do as a first step?
I think my recommendation is always to see if the existing and operating animal welfare organizations are able to help in any way, even if that's letting people borrow traps or if they have TNR funding and are able to help guide people how to get started. That's also tricky, though, because that's what I did. I started out trying to ask the existing organizations, and it's hard to have a heart that needs to help and have resources not readily available to be able to make a difference for these cats.
So I will jump in here and I will say that it's great to find out what local resources are in your community, but don't believe that's the end all be all of it. You need to continue to think critically within yourself and say, what feels right to myself, you know, to me, what feels right. And so what may feel right is trapping the cats, getting them spayed or neutered, ear tipping them, and going online and finding the most awesome shelter you could ever put together out there in their backyard, in the backyard, and make a feral cat palace back there for them. Another option might be, you know, you've got cats in the backyard, they're very friendly. You put a paper collar on them because you're not sure if anybody owns them. So you do your due diligence and you find out that four other people are feeding this cat in their neighborhood, you know, in the neighborhood. And so therefore you've created connections within the neighborhood and you understand that the cat is being cared for and doesn't need to be removed from the area that it's in. There's so many different scenarios. You are becoming that cat's advocate or the cat's advocate. And not guardian, but really their advocate and trying to figure out what works best for all of them. You may trap the cat, get the cat spayed or neutered and ear tipped, and you bring it in and you look at videos or listen to podcasts out there. The Kitten Lady also has done a lot of recordings on how to work with feral cats. And she's done a series on a feral mom with her kittens and everything too. And I'm not saying that's for everyone, but if it is something you're interested in, there are resources out there for you to explore. So you don't have to be dependent on only the resources that are available to you in the local community. We can all create and empower ourselves to make our own decisions for those cats. Would you agree with that?
I definitely would. And Kitten Lady is a resource I used so much when I was getting started with my first few litters of kittens. And she helped me save quite a few of them. So. Yeah.
Hannah Shaw has done a tremendous job elevating the status of cats all around the country and I'm sure all around the world. And kudos to her, to her husband. They have fantastic videos. Just she's an incredible educator and big shout out to Hannah Shaw and all the work that they have done to help promote cat and kitten care, especially. So it's really wonderful on that side. Caitlin, I want to bring forward the fact that you are in Vermont. We're not the biggest state in the country. I think we are the state with the highest per capita ownership of cats, which is interesting. But we aren't a Texas. We're not a California. We're not a Florida. And many people ask me this question. They say, well, you're in New England and, you know, New England, you can do things. And then in other parts of the country, you can't. But you've been very focused on a specific area. So I get the sense that if I picked you up and put you down in a community in Florida, you would probably approach things the same way. But I don't want to put words in your mouth. Does that sound right?
I think that I would. I have a real core belief that most cats, I will not say all, because I do know that some do not ever want human companionship. But with enough time and love and consistency, I believe that a lot of cats would rather live inside and have their food offered to them and be pet whenever they want than to be outside. So in Vermont, it gets cold in the winter. And so a lot of cats, community cats, die over the winter. But yeah, I would imagine in Florida, the weather is very different, obviously. So I'm not sure what my exact approach would be. I think it would feel less urgent with the weather being more livable for animals outside, because I do, especially this time of year in Vermont, I feel this real urgency and kind of desperation and hopelessness with it getting so cold and being aware of all these cats outside and not having the space to be able to bring more of them in and care for them. But I think, yeah, I think my philosophy would be similar anywhere I was, would be to try to give the cats the opportunity, if it's what they want, to have an easier life rather than an outside, more survival than thriving life.
I will chime in and say, you know, in Newburyport, back in the 90s, when we had 300 cats living down on the Newburyport waterfront with 14 feeding stations, we certainly had our fair share of cold winters. And as long as the cats had enough shelter, and there were old mill buildings down there, lots of ways for cats to go in and out. And we certainly had shelters set up as well as feeding stations with, we at that time had volunteers feeding twice a day, monitoring with checklists. That was before trail cams and all that stuff. But our feeders worried all the time about the cats and their well-being out there. And they aged well. The ferals, they aged well. They lived up to be, you know, anywhere from 13 to 17 years old. But it is an emotional roller coaster because we like knowing where our cats are and we don't have that benefit. I mean, if we put them all, we had air tags on them now, we could. And, you know, maybe microchipping will get to the point where we just will track them on some sort of an app somewhere. But we're not quite there yet. But it is in the works, I think, because we as human beings, we want to know where our cats are specifically. So there are ways for cats to live successfully outdoors, either in bad weather or in disasters. Many of you know Brian Cordes, who is with Neighborhood Cats, and he's been heading up the rescue of the cats from the burn zone in Maui. And many people felt like no cats survived through that fire. And they have pulled out 400 cats, and they have about 125 more to go. They have about 25, 30 trail cams streaming to track where the cats are and how they're, where they're coming out. And they're trapping every night, trapping more cats with the goal of trapping all the cats and bringing them in and trying to reunite them with their families if there are families connected with them. So they're great survivors. What I guess what they did when the fire came through, the cats went into the water drains. And so the fire passed over them and they survived that way. They went underground. So many more cats survived than what was predicted. So they do have an incredible survivor capability that we may not fully appreciate. So just be aware, if you are in a situation where you're not able to trap cats and bring them in and rehabilitate them, and you do trap, neuter, and return them outside, there are possibilities for them to be safe out there. So depending on the location, we have to evaluate at all times. I'm not going to return a colony of cats on a superhighway, but you have to make these decisions that, you know, you can make the best of a not so great situation, and the cats will still find shelter, you know, in their environment. So they are resilient. They are creative. the most important thing you can do is to get them spayed or neutered because the kittens, and I think, Caitlin, when I was tabling next door to you, you were bottle feeding a kitten. And, you know, it's the kittens that are incredibly vulnerable out there, too. I understand advocating for the adult cats, and I'm agreeing with you 100% that if we can find an option for those cats, it's great. But depending on the resources in the community, we do want to prevent the births of the kittens out in the community, too. I'm sure you've seen enough kittens that have been suffering out there that you don't want to see any more.
Yes, exactly. We do prioritize when we start with a colony. We prioritize females, especially if they appear pregnant, and kittens, because the kittens are the most vulnerable.
Yep. So, Caitlin, if folks are interested in finding out more about From Feral to Family, how would they do that?
Sure. So they can visit our website, fromferaltofamily.org. And we also have a Facebook page and Instagram page, From Feral to Family VT.
And Caitlin, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I think that just giving feral cats a chance, going at it with love, if that's something that you do want to try, helping any age feral cat, kitten to adult, and just keeping in mind that it's not going to be instant. It takes time, but that it's really rewarding and heart-filling work.
Excellent. Caitlin, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on my show, and actually a snippet for our listeners. So the process, here is a process here. So you go to a colony, no return option. We trap, rehabilitate, we evaluate, and then we relocate or we rehome. And that's the flow chart for what you are doing at From Feral to Family. So I want to thank you for everything that you're doing as an advocate for cats. And thank you for agreeing to be a guest on my show. And I hope we'll have you on again in the future.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.